This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, joining you from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. And thank you to everyone listening tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you tuning in to our website at horseracingradio.net. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And I cannot stress enough how important the PDJF is to the 60-some former jockeys who rely on the PDJF for financial assistance. And if you're interested in helping, please visit pdjf.org for more information. Now, joining me tonight, a jockey who has an impressively long list of graded stakes winners. He's been riding for over 20 years, and he hails from France with 975 wins and over $55 million in earnings. Jockey Brice Blanc, welcome to Jock Talk.
Thank you for having me.
So excited to hear your story, Brice. And tell us, here we're starting now, tell us, where are you at these days?
I'm in back to California and Santa Anita and Belmont, kind of doing the California circuit.
I heard, Brice, that you recently participated in a basketball game.
Well, actually, I wasn't.
You didn't?
I bailed out, yeah.
You bailed out? Oh, no.
I did it for a few years, and then this year I didn't participate. I kind of almost twisted my ankle 1 year, and since then I've been a little bit on the, kind of, let's put it on the bench.
Put on the bench. Well, you don't want to...
I'm a little hole for the basketball kind of thing anymore. So. But no, actually, I had plans, and I didn't really pay attention on the dates, and so I wasn't able to make it.
Okay, well, sorry to hear that. I'm sure it would have been a fun event. It's the PDJF Jockeys charity basketball game is what I was referring to. But if, you know, you don't want to have a twisted ankle and you need to ride. So that is perfectly...
Yeah, but I did it for a few years, and it's a fun event. And it's this one, you realize how tough those little kids are. Actually, they're pretty good little athletes themselves. So especially, you know, I mean, when you see, how tough it is for us, but when you see little kids, you know, I think they're about 14 years old, and they're taller than we are. Some of them, so
they're taller than you are.
Yeah, they're pretty good little athletes. It's a very, for, like you say, it's for a good cause, and it's usually a lot of fun. Like I say, I missed it this year, but it's a lot of fun. It's been every year for quite a few years, I think.
Well, you have to join in next year, Brice, and
I will.
Very good, very good. Well, let's start out. We usually start out these shows by going back to how you began, and you grew up in France, and you are one of many siblings. So tell us about your family life growing up in France.
I'm from Lyon, just a little bit outside Lyon as well. So literally, I've got a half brothers and sisters. My parents are both from two marriages. Previous marriages, I should say, and I'm literally the baby of the family. I'm the only one with both of them. So kind of, I started school literally in the city, and then on the weekends I was going in a little bit in the country. But their horse thing didn't really come until a little later on. Didn't know much about horses and stuff, but when I went to college, which is in France, private school, one of the guys that I were one of the friends that I had at school, who was just a little younger than me, literally just mentioned that he was very little, and I mentioned that he was going to do the tryout for the school. And at first I was like, oh, that's interesting. And that literally was like you would say jockey school slash horseman school, literally. And in France, you're allowed to, there's a lot of trading schools. So if for any reason, after, you know, you hit a certain, I don't know, here in America it's a little different than it is in France, but which in France would be like fourth grade, so you would be about 15 years old, you're allowed to get to those trading schools, which help you a little bit more focusing on a trade and a work or a sport in general that you would be interested in. And literally they just do regular schooling, like a regular school, but then teach you a trade as well. Horse racing actually has a trading school, which is called, it's called the AFATEC. And really, after he mentioned this, it kind of got in my head a little bit. I was not very big and small as well, like he was. I was a little taller, but very small, so I talked to my parents about it and started watching TV. And in France, we had back in those days, there was no, you know, like you would say, HRTV or TVG type thing. And now there's a channel called Equidia that covers the racing throughout the year. But back in those days, it was just like what we used to call the tierce, which is 3, 4, 5 days a week. Literally, the whole France, the Parmutuel, all over France, you could bet on that race. It was like you would say, the lotto. I mean, it was a big deal. So they used to actually show it on just that one race on TV, on national TV. And I guess they came to the end of the school year, and I ended up, I was watching TV, and it would be like watching the Kentucky Derby. So it was the French Oaks, and well, on TV that day, and it was actually the Tierce for that day, and it just, I kind of fell in love with it at that point. It just showed, I don't know, it just clicked, and I got really kind of excited about it, and school wasn't going very good as well at that time, so it was kind of, it just came out at the right time, and kind of went from there, and kind of talked to my parents about it, and actually went to the trial, which was in June, and kind of, that's kind of how I got into the horse racing business.
Wow, so you just happened to be friends with someone who was interested in becoming a jockey. Because of your size, you thought about the idea, but had you ever been to the racetrack at that point?
No, never, actually. My family has, I mean, apart from my dad, who, you know, obviously was a little bit of a gambler that way, you know, a player, horse player, and he knew a few jockeys that he was, I wouldn't say friends, but the, you know, buddies kind of thing. But literally, I didn't know anything about horses, didn't know nothing about horse racing at all in general. And it just kind of happened that, you know, this kid was talking about it. And then one day we were at the restaurant, and one of the girls who was doing the service just came back to town. And I guess she knew me from when I was a young girl and a little kid, I guess. And she said the same thing. She's like, oh, he didn't grow up much. He should be a jockey, and I guess that's how it kind of just all came to. Those kind of two little things happened, and I kind of inquired about it and then talked to my dad about it and my mom, and kind of got interested into the business and kind of got started. So I actually applied for the tryout, which they took me, and my dad told me, he's like, I'll make you a deal. When I was 15, he said, every Saturday morning, I will take you to the track, which back in the day was a small racetrack in Lyon called Lyon Paris, which is just outside Lyon, and it was one of the two racetracks. And back then, they used to have training center. The training center was there, and so he told me, it's like, for the next month, you have to. I'll drive you to the track. You can around 5:30 go over there and then stay Saturday morning, work for a trainer for a few hours, and then you'll take the bus back home. And he said, if you still like it, then you can apply for it. And well, we'll see how it goes. So actually, that's what I did. I did it for about a month and a half, and went every Saturday morning to work for this trainer for a few hours. So that's kind of really when I really realized how much I really loved it, and how I fell in love with it, and went through the 3 days which we had to do back in those days, at the training center, which where the school was, and did those 3 days, and kind of had to wait and to get the see if I was going to be taken or not, and took a few days, and then I got a letter on the mail, and they told me they took me.
Wow, you say...
it was pretty exciting.
You say you loved it from the very beginning, Brees, and you have to love it. When you're only 15, you have to wake up at 5:30 on a Saturday morning and go work in the barns. And so you applied for the school. What was the application process?
Well, mainly it was obviously weight, your age. Back in those days, I don't know if they still do that now, but we had to get a what do you call it? A they took your left hand and were watching the X-ray. Sorry, they took an X-ray on my left hand, and I guess around 14 or 15 years old, depending on the gaps you have in between your joints, they can literally tell how tall you're going to be. And by telling how tall you were going to be, they were able to get a weight average and of your size. And literally, it was part of the application. They didn't want to just take kids who were just going to be way too big and way too heavy. So that was one of the parts. The X-ray was one of the things, and literally we stayed for 3 days, and it was just to kind of see how you live in community as well with other kids. Obviously, the horse part of was one of the many things, but a lot of the kids didn't have much experience with horses, so they expected you to not know much about things or didn't have any experience with horses or anything like that. So it is a school, and they have to teach you all those things as well. So it was, I think, actually a lot too about see how you are in community with other kids and stuff, and because it's when you come straight out of, like, I would say, like, almost high school, you always lived with your mom and dad, and in this kind of school you have to stay overnight and literally stay there for a week at a time, and even more than that. So that was kind of the curriculum, until your school, obviously they don't want kids who didn't work at school and won't focus and not interested on what they were doing. So that was just a few parts of the application, really. But obviously, weight and size was the main one.
So, Brees, when you were accepted and then you started attending the school, you said a lot of the kids didn't have experience. Like yourself, you didn't have a lot of experience, I suppose, going into the school. Was it a little bit overwhelming those first few days being there at the school with everything going on, working with the horses?
Yeah, no, it was because when I got the okay from the school that they were taking me, they were going to send me to another city to do another trial out. So it was kind of weird. But then literally a couple of days later, the director of the school in Maison Lafitte, which is one of the training centers, main training centers in France, which is just outside Paris, which is like near Chantilly as well. Literally the director of the school called my mom and just kind of asked her if I was going to be around in the month of August and see if I just wanted to come directly to the training center instead of doing another trial out there and see how I was going to fit and if I was going to like it and stuff like that. So literally for me, after the three-day tryout, I just literally went straight to this, literally to work for a trainer at a barn, at a stable for the whole month. So it was a little scary at first because back at that time, I just literally didn't really like my parents. I was, you know, very close to my mom and dad, and that was a little scary. And then go there to work and get up at 5 o'clock in the morning every day was a little intimidating. And especially I didn't know anything about horses on top of that. So
on top of that.
A little different.
Well, that had to be a very big transition, Brees, for a young man and just walking into this whole new world. And how long did you stay there with the school, learning there at the stable?
Well, the school was a three-year apprenticeship. So from the day I got accepted after that month, obviously I stayed. And it was a three-year apprenticeship. So where the at not only working for the stable, which I stayed for the same stable for 3 years, but then you had back in those days, which a few things have changed since I've left school, obviously. But back in those days, we had school and working at the stables as well. So it was a dual thing. You had to do both at the same time. So in the mornings we worked at the stables, and then in the afternoon we had regular schedule at school like regular kids. So mathematics, you know, French, English, just the regular lessons. Ecology, which is the science of horses, from, you know, knowing all the bones of horses to the biology of everything, the physics, all things like that. So we had regular classes in the afternoon, and then in the mornings we worked at the stables.
So you had a well-rounded education, including the horse stuff, of course, as well. You said you said prior to that school wasn't really going well. Did you not enjoy being in class, learning about mathematics or whatever that was?
Yeah, no, I was not very good. I had a hard time focusing and I was just not interested at all. And definitely going to the trading school, I think, really helped me because the college I was going into was actually pretty tough. And when I ended up going over there, which was a lot easier for me school-wise, literally made it pretty easy for me. And then it was a big challenge for the horses side of it, but I really kind of got into it and clicked. It took me a few months to really kind of get really get kind of the idea and get kind of good at it. And I would say my boss was very, very difficult, but I wouldn't be here today if I didn't come from his school, put it that way. He was a very good horseman, very dedicated, and was expecting only the best from everybody working with him, and wouldn't expect any less. So he was a little hard, very hard on me, but like I said, he teach me a lot of the right tools that I have now that probably I'm known for, and it's been helping me throughout my career. So.
You say he taught you the essential tools that you need today. What were those things that he taught you?
Well, we had a lot of jumpers as well, that not only flat horses. And so he came from the jumping school as well. So I had to do both. I had to do a lot of the jumping and a lot of the flat horses as well. So I rode a few jumpers, and at first, you know, with the X-rays, they thought I was going to be very tall and probably very heavy, which I ended up not being. I'm very tall for, I'm probably one of the tallest jockeys around here, but my weight has always stayed pretty good. So I did a lot of jumping, and I rode a few races, jumping races, and that really helped me to kind of get the to have better hands in a way, to be more patient, to get a better feel on pace as well, and how to get along with horses instead of fighting them. Just you know, because jumping races is very, you have to be one with your horse, and you can't be against each other, otherwise it just doesn't work. So I got a lot of that, I think, trying to figure horses out and just kind of try to don't fight them and just try to and relax in them as much as possible. So I think I got a lot of that from his schooling, because he was very difficult. That way he wanted to make sure, he always was on me about, you know, keeping my hands down, being light with the horse's mouth, doing this, doing certain things. Because in France too, you know, the thing people don't realize is when you start schools like this, you start from scratch in Europe. You not only you get on horses, but you groom, you do everything. I mean, you do all the hard work from the start, from cleaning stalls to taking care of your horses, and look, usually you have about three or four horses you care for every day, and it makes you become a better horseman as well as a jockey, I think. And not only you become very attached to those horses, but you learn how to take care for them and worry about them and see what the little things they need and they don't need, and you get to learn a lot about horses and how you can communicate with them in a certain way that people don't realize. Our horses are very intelligent, the more intelligent people give them, you know, credit for.
That's very well said, Brees, and I completely agree with you. I started out in a similar manner, taking care of horses before actually starting to ride. I believe that you better understand what exactly goes into preparing a horse for a race and how much work it really takes to get a horse from the beginning to the ending point of actually running in a race, and what a well-rounded education you had. Was there ever a time when you thought maybe that wasn't the right thing for you to do?
Well, the first 3 months, a couple of months I was there, I didn't think I was going to make it. You know, literally I had to clean the chickens and wash the doors of the barn, and I was doing more of the dirty work and wash the bandages and all the stuff that the bell boots and things like that, and I didn't think I was going to make it, to be honest with you, but you know, I persevered, and little by little it got better, and I think my head lad and my boss kind of got to see that I was working hard at it, and then they literally started giving me a little more of an opportunity, and it kind of, all of a sudden it kind of clicked, and once I got the over the hump of getting going a little bit and getting the idea of what I was supposed to do, I was a tendency of being a very over perfectionist, and I've been too slow doing things by trying to do them too perfect, and they were always on kind of on me nonstop to try to be quicker and faster to do the job better, but fast as well. And it just kind of clicked, and once it clicked, it seemed to go very fast after that. I got kind of in the groove of things, and it kind of went on better. The next few years actually were actually great. So
it clicked, and 3 years later, what did you do?
Well, 3 years later, I actually stayed an extra year as after the school was over and I got my diploma. I stayed another year for my boss as a salary, which I was just trying to see if I was going to ride or you know, kind of see where my future was going to take me. Definitely, my boss kind of had me as probably it would be great, be in charge of the barn, and, you know, especially when we're going out of town and things like that. He kind of had me in charge of a few things and stuff. But deep inside, I really wanted to ride, and I just really persevered on that. And I didn't see my future going anywhere, staying there. And for the first year, this was the first year where we had a big owner in France that gave $10,000 to the school, and the school was supposed to organize a trip for the best apprentices of the school to go to a different country and to visit and kind of see what what's out there, to just get a better idea of not just how France is. But so anyway, the trip ended up being here in California, actually. So I actually was one of the few guys that came here in California for that trip for 2 weeks. And literally, they had to kind of cancel the trip at first because it happened just during the riots in L.A. in 92. So it was pretty rough. So they had to cancel it and redate it to a different time, which was a few weeks later. But so I was able to come here, and I came literally in Santa Anita for those 2 weeks with a few friends of mine who actually became very successful as well in France. Thierry Tulliez, which won the Breeders' Cup a few years back, was from the trip as well. And so we stayed 2 weeks, and it was amazing. And literally, I wasn't in the plane going back home already that I told the director of the school who came with us that I wanted to come back. So, and he didn't take me very seriously at first. But I bugged him every day for 6 months, and he finally took me seriously, and literally in October that year, I was back here. And I got a job for the late Rodney Rash, which back in those days had a lot of horses for Gary Tanaka. They had a lot of European horses back then. So I started working for Rodney for 9 months during my visas, and then I was going back to France for a little while, and then coming back, I came back for a second visa. And then I was able to get a green card, so.
We'll continue our visit with jockey Brees Blanc after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi. Hi, I'm Tito Beverage, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit Tito'sVodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Get ready for the third annual Jockeys and Jeans charity event to benefit the PDJF coming to Gulfstream Park on Sunday, February 28th. Last year, Jockeys and Jeans raised more than $200,000 to benefit permanently disabled riders, and you can help make this year's event even bigger. Meet and mingle with an all-star cast of jockeys, including Lafitte Pinkai Jr., Georgie Velasquez, Pat Day, Randy Romero, and many more. Tickets go on sale at the beginning of January, and donations and sponsorship can be purchased starting December 7th. For more information, visit jockeysandjeans.com. Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to New York, where Irad Ortiz had a great week as he led North America in wins and went 3-for-3 in stakes races. Ortiz consistently came in the money on 61% of his mounts and finished the week with 10 wins, 7 seconds, and 2 third-place finishes. Corey Lannery had a good week at the Fairgrounds as he won the Mineshaft Handicap aboard Majestic Harbor. 4 races later, Lannery would shock the betting public aboard Venus Valentine in the Rachel Alexandra. Lannery guided Venus Valentine to the rail in the stretch and prevailed by a length at odds of 74-1. Lannery finished the week with 3 wins, 1 second, and 6 third-place finishes. Iram Diego continued to extend his lead in the rider standings at Sam Houston by winning 30% and coming in the money on 80% of his mounts. On Saturday, Diego finished out of the money on only 1 of his 7 mounts. For the week, he finished with 6 wins, 6 seconds, and 4 third-place finishes. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Florent Giroux, had a great week at the Fairgrounds. On Saturday, Giroux won 3 stakes races, including the Fairgrounds Handicap aboard Chocolate Ride and the Risen Star aboard Gunrunner. Giroux finished the week with 7 wins, 2 seconds, and 2 third-place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is the perfect book for anyone who has wondered what it takes to be a professional jockey. The sport's most prominent jockeys and trainers tell their stories and share their insights on all that goes on behind the scenes. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
At the top of the lane, Need You Know, the leader, taken on now by Cozy Up Lady. On the outside of that comes Wishing Gate. Paranda making a run down the center of the track. Miss Serendipity on the extreme outside, and Stormy Lucy nowhere to go. They come for home. Miss Serendipity, Paranda on the outside. Paranda, Miss Serendipity. Miss Serendipity strikes the front, and Miss Serendipity, perfectly ridden by Breeze Brong, takes the yellow ribbon. Miss Serendipity to Veranda. Close in for third, Stormy Lucy or Cozy Up Lady.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigle here, joined tonight by jockey Breeze Blanc. Perfectly ridden race. That was an excellent replay, and we'll get to that. Miss Serendipity in the 2014 Yellow Ribbon Handicap. But before we went to the break, we were just talking about your arrival to California and your dealings with your green card, and you came back and you're working for trainer Rodney Rash. And take it from there. What did you think of California when you first got there?
Well, it was the first day I was here, I fell in love with it from the start. Just obviously the weather. I was coming from France, especially. It was just amazing. But I really enjoyed the challenge of things being a little different than France, and I enjoyed that. At least I worked in the mornings, and then in the afternoon I was off. So you had a lot more flexibility with your time. And at first I was not really thinking about riding races or anything. As much as deep inside in my heart I wanted to ride, but I kind of had a really kind of pass on the idea, literally, like at that time, not really being too, you know, focused on it, but more focused on meeting new people, learning English, especially, was one of my main goals, and really just kind of enjoying this opportunity that I had being here, and like I said, getting the experience of literally American racing was my main goal at that time, and I really enjoyed it, and it was just. A little tough at first. Obviously, I didn't speak a word of English, so it was a little tricky. But it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed the first 9 months that I was here. And when I went back to France, I definitely applied for another visa, and kind of the rest kind of came through. I got my green card later on, and been there since, really.
Wow, so you first arrived and you couldn't speak English. That had to be difficult.
Yeah, actually, it was pretty interesting story as well. I know we have only an hour, but the guy that got me the job for Rodney was the French guy. And at that time, Rodney had a really nice horse called Navarone that was running in the Breeders' Cup in Gulfstream that year. So Claude was the French guy that galloped those horses, that galloped that horse, and that he was going to Florida as well with the horse. So for literally 2 weeks, they made cards. So Rodney and Claude ended up being in Florida, and I stayed here with the assistants and everybody else, and they had to make cards. So on one side it was in English for the assistants, and on the other side it was in French for me, so I couldn't understand what to do, you know. But within a few days, I kind of got the hang of what to do and stuff. So the good thing with horses, it's not that difficult because the routine is there of every, after a week and a half or 2 weeks you're here, you kind of get the idea of what's going on. And, you know, it literally was fairly easy, you know.
You don't have to say too much.
You had to make calls, and it was interesting.
That's too funny. So you come back to California, you go to France, you come back, and eventually you start riding. What convinced you to take out your jockey's license?
Well, a few people told me that I should ride, that I was very light still. And I just literally, for those 18 months that I was here, I've learned a lot. Obviously, my timing was one of the main things I needed to learn. You know, obviously in Europe, you don't have the clock like we do here in the U.S. And especially in California, timing is very, very important. And I really, really had to kind of get the timing right. And working for Rodney was very, very stressful that way for working horses. He was very, literally to the... To the not even the second, you know. He was very, very harsh on everything. He wanted the horses to go at a certain time when they were working. He was very difficult that way. And when he was not happy, he was not happy. So it was actually, after I did those 18 months for him, I realized that actually it was kind of easier to ride races than working for Rodney in a way, because it was less stressful. I think my timing was at that time very good. My English was getting better too. And once I got my green card, I decided that it was time for me to get started. And one of my best friends, Ben Fissel at the time, kind of helped me get an agent, and that's how I got rolling a little bit. And the first few months were a little slow to get going, and then I kind of picked up an agent called Vic Lipton, and we did really well, and I ended up being second leading apprentice in the country with Vic 2 years in a row, so we did very, very well.
Wow. What did Rodney think when you told him you would start riding?
He actually put me on my first winner, so he was one of the he's one of the people that helped me a lot throughout, and I would say Charlie Whittingham as well. I worked for Charlie freelancing a little bit during those 18 months, and both of them put me on my first and my second winner, so they helped me a lot tremendously, and you know, I can't thank him enough. Obviously they both now gone, and you know, not, it would be great to have them see how kind of my career went. I'm sure they would be very proud to help me get started and stuff. So, but yeah, it was pretty amazing. He was a pretty good supporter, and he's helped me quite a bit. Both of them did.
Do you remember that first winter?
I do. Oh, yeah. It took me a long time, so I do remember. The name of the horse was Golf Tide. And I remember the story, too, which is kind of interesting. I was galloping him in the mornings for quite a few months before I started riding. And I guess he got scratched at the gate. I think Patrick was riding him. Pival was riding him. And somehow, I don't know, the vet scratched him the time before. And anyway, so Rodney put me on the horse, and he ended up winning, and he paid like $40 or something.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting.
Jockey Brice Blanc joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brice, you focused on the California circuit for many years, and as I mentioned in the intro, I have pages printed out of all of your graded stakes winners, and we can't talk about all of them because that would take many, many different hours. And but tell us some of your favorite horses you've ridden.
I would say that one of my favorite horses would be Happy and You Know It for the late Bobby Frankel. He's another person that I couldn't thank enough. He's helped me a lot. Especially as a young rider, not to be better myself, but just as a mentor as well. He was quite an amazing trainer to be around. Very difficult to work with as well, but you knew when you were riding for Bobby Frankel, you were going out and you were going to win. There was no in-between. And he had a way of putting a lot of confidence in his horses, and literally put a lot of confidence in his jockeys, because when I was riding for him, I felt like I couldn't get beat, literally. So so Happy and You Know It, would say Hish was one of my favorites. I think we win about five grade ones together. She was quite an amazing racehorse.
How was Bobby Frankel difficult to ride for?
Well, Bobby was not difficult to ride for, but very difficult to work with in a way. To ride for, he was very easy because he never gave you any instructions. He expected you to do your job. He was one of those people that hired you to do a job, and you wouldn't be hired to do the job if you weren't capable of doing it. And he did his job. The horse was trained, ready to go. No, it was your part to do the job, but he was expecting nothing but the best. If you mess up, then there was literally not too many more opportunities after that. But he was very easy to ride for in a way, because he didn't give you any instructions. He just, unless the horse were curvy or something like that, he would just kind of tell you, you know, be careful on this or do that. But overall, he was very easy going that way. Just, he did his job. Now it's time for you to do yours. So that way it was very easy, but he was very difficult in a way. In the morning, he was expecting a lot as well. And I wouldn't say very difficult. He was just expecting the best. Let's just say it like this.
Well, as they say, Brees, a bad jockey can't follow instructions. A good jockey doesn't need them. So that is interesting about Bobby Frankel. How about other mounts that are favorites of yours, other victories?
Well, I would say my first grade one was pretty exciting, too. I put a lot of work in her, so she had a very special part in my heart, which is a filly called Famous Digger for Barry Abrams, which we ended up winning 5 stakes in a row with her, and won the Delmar Oaks, which was my first grade one. She was very, very difficult to start with. I had to put a lot of work with her, and we ended up doing really well with her, so she's one of my favorites. And in the last few years, actually, I had mainly one favorite that I rode last year, a filly called Spanish Queen, who was pretty special. That was a little bit on the difficult side as well. That became one of the American Oaks last summer. So I had a lot of favorites, so it's kind of hard to just pinpoint. And like you said, it's a big line of them.
Yes.
But I would say those three... Well, kind of my favorite. Mr. Indipiti was pretty special too, because I was able to win a stake right off my injury with her, and she we put a lot of work into her, and Ron gave me the opportunity to Ron McAnally gave me the He sticked with me throughout my injuries and waited for me, and it made it super special as well, because Ron is a great, great man, obviously in the Hall of Fame, great trainer as well. Love riding for him over the years, and he's one of the few that stick with me for those last few years as well. And Mr. Indipiti was made it extra special winning the Gamely with her, and winning grade one for Ron was pretty special as well.
How about Flamboyant?
Well, he's actually been quite a fun to ride lately. He's really came together. Paddy's done a great job with him, and I think he's hopefully we can keep the year going like he's doing right now. He's a happy horse. He's doing great. He's a lot of fun to ride. He's got the potential to literally have a great year. I hope we can keep him the way he is right now. He obviously loved this kind of softer turf course like we have here at Santa Anita right now. I think he's definitely has the potential to be any kind of horse during the year if he keeps progressing like he is right now.
Well, he lit up the tote board for the San Gabriel, and I heard, Brees, that the trick to him is that you speak to him in French.
Well, I guess being French, I just thought maybe that was the key. Well, I don't know. I don't know if we just speak French or what, but he seems like he's responding pretty good right now.
Whatever's working, don't stop, right?
But Chuck Winters said to me in the paddock that day, he's like, well, whatever you do, just speak in French to him and go win it. So, after the race, I told Chuck, I said, well, I guess it worked.
Obviously it did. Now, Brees, I noticed something with looking at this list, long list of graded stakes winners. So many of them are on the turf, and you are known as a turf specialist. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's one of those things that when I came here from a background of a little bit of the jumping, and early on when I had the bug here, a lot of the horses were handicapped in a certain way. And I think I got kind of tagged really quickly because being one of the few French riders to kind of get started here, and especially in California, I mean, Jean-Luc Samin was in New York and I was the only one here. I kind of got tagged really early because the European, there was back in those days a lot of French horses and European horses were bought and taken from overseas and run here. And
a lot of them were handicapped with very low weight. And back in those days, I was able to ride really light. And I ended up winning a lot of stake races, even with the bug, with because those horses were handicapped with very low weight. And, you know, they were carrying three-thirds that weight in Europe, and they came here and carry very low weight. And they end up, I win a few stakes just because of the weight and be me, you know, me having the kind of experience of European horses a little bit as well. And So I think I got tagged really early because of that. And I've just always got more better horses on the grass, but I've had opportunities on the dirt. And for whatever reason, it seems like people notice my wins on the grass more than they do on the dirt. So it doesn't matter how many speed horses I ride or I win, they never seem to see those. It seems like people notice the grass races, but not the dirt ones, you know. So
is that frustrating sometimes just because you
well,
want to be...
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to complain to ride good grass horses. It's not, you know, it's been a lot of fun, and I'm really enjoying, because I think you have to ride a lot more tactical on the grass than you do on the dirt. But it is hard because I don't get the opportunities to ride the Derby like some guys do. I mean, I rode it a couple of times, but with horses that didn't have really great shots on paper, and so I don't get, you know, the opportunity to get in those three-year-old races and the Breeders' Cup as, you know, as much opportunities as some guys would. So it just kind of lowered my opportunities to get into the classics as well. And you never know. It's just all it takes is one horse to make the difference, you know. And I guess that's why I get up every morning and try to find that special horse who can take you to the Triple Crown or those kind of races that make you special, but take you to that special experience that only a few people get to experience throughout the career, usually, you know.
It only takes one, Brees. And you were talking about the turf, and you said it's more tactical, and I would completely agree with you, but describe to our listeners the biggest differences that come with riding from on the turf from the dirt. What are the differences?
Well, to me, I think riding on the grass is the best horse doesn't always win. I think the best ride always wins. So I think with a horse that I think most grass races, at least you have, depending, you know, how many horses in the race, but let's say 10 horses in the race, let's say there's at least 5 or 6 legitimate chances to win. And then on the dirt, you know, you're going to have maybe a couple that are legitimate chance, and then the others are kind of there as well. But it seems like on the grass, everybody finishes up very close to each other. So with the best trip and the best ride, you have a chance to beat the favorite. Then on the dirt, I think you have a lot different as well, because a lot of horses don't like, you know, you have a lot of bias. You know, the track has to be, you know, a certain way. So if it's speed-oriented on one day, especially in tracks, our tracks in California especially, if it's speed-oriented and you're on the dead closer, I mean, you diminish your chances, like, obviously, out of the gate, you know. So there's a lot of bias from the dirt. A lot of horses don't run into the dirt, so you don't have to be saving ground, and you can be carried wide. The literally sometimes the best horse, and you 6 wide or 5 wide, if you're on the best horse, you're going to win. So I think it's a little bit different that way, that the grass, you need to save ground. I always, at least myself, try to save ground at least one of the turns. So if you get carried both turns wide, literally, I think you have no chance to win. And especially on those small ovals that we have and short stretches, it's not like back in Europe when you have those big sweeping turns and that you can work with. Here in North America, the short the short stretches and the tight turns make the race have to be very tight, and you have to be in the right spot in the right place to be able to win.
Well said, Brees. We only have about 3 or 4 minutes left here. Real quickly, tell us, you relocated to Kentucky for a very brief time. Tell us what you thought of Kentucky.
I really enjoyed Kentucky. I had a really good time. It was a little hard, the traveling part, having to go to different racetrack throughout the year. But overall, I really enjoyed it. It was a great experience. I got to meet great horsemen and great ride with great riders. And it was a great experience for me as well because, you know, here in California, you get kind of used to riding with the same guys and know all their little tricks and what they do, what they don't do. And, you know, it was nice to go to the Midwest and back east and I get to ride with different riders as well. So I got to learn more and just kind of experience everybody else, because here it's just almost like you in an island, and it was nice to be able to learn more from each other rider, that all of a sudden there was like so many different riders that I had to ride with that I didn't know each one, or I didn't know what they would do or not do. So it was a little difficult at first to kind of get back past that idea that I knew everybody I rode with, but it was a great experience.
You have a son here in Kentucky too, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, just in Louisville.
In Louisville. How old is he?
He's going to be 14 next month.
14.
Actually.
Do you think he'll ever get involved with the horses?
I don't know. He don't show too much interest right now, but he is actually very good with horses. I think he's got he's just got that thing where it comes very naturally to him. But he hasn't shown really any interest so far. So I'm not forcing it into him or anything like that. If he comes with it, I'll be happy to try to help him the best I can to teach him the right way and point him in the right direction. But I'm definitely not forcing him into anything.
What's next, Bryce? We just have 1 minute left. What are you looking forward to next? What's coming up in your career?
Hopefully Breeders' Cup. You know, it's been a dream of my life. Seems like I can't seem to get to it, but you have to have the right opportunities. And I would love to win the Arlington Million. Those are the races I would love to put in that, you know, in the calendar for sure. Hopefully, Flamboyant get us in part of those. I mean, that'd be nice this year. That'd be awesome. He's definitely the best one that I have right now. And I've picked up quite a few decent horses in the past few months. My agent's done a great job. Aaron is working really hard, and we're picking up good business. And I think that's kind of the future. I'm looking forward to it. And those are the two races that I would definitely would want in my career highlight.
Good things coming up for you in the future, Brees. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You'll also find a full schedule of every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network on our website. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Check it out on horseracingradio.net. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.